You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Yeah, let's go. Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle. I'll try to make it through today. My FOMO is coming out, I'll admit. Everybody up late last night. Going to Foo Fighters.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
How could I not? I know. I had an invite. It's just like, I can't go to a show. The show looked like it ended close to midnight.
You already said this morning that you already felt like you didn't sleep anyway.
I know. I should have. Based on how little I slept. You ever have those nights where you're just like, you felt like you were awake all night, even though you were kind of back and forth with sleep? Yeah, it's just a mess. And I could have just gone to Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
It looked like a blast. All the pictures I've seen from everyone I know who was there. It looked like the arena looks fantastic by all accounts. The sound is great. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
pretty
your ears cool. Could have been ringing all night along with you being half awake.
I know. Yeah. How great would that be? And I'd also not be able to talk today, too, because nothing sort of leaves you unable to speak well the next day, quite like going to a concert, especially if you're going to sing along. It's loud. Yeah. You don't realize how much you're yelling.
Every song's been on the radio. Every song's a hit. You know all the words.
Right. I mean, you can't help it. I'm not like, I like the Foo Fighters. I wouldn't say I'm a huge Foo Fighters fan, but I definitely like the Foo Fighters. Like, I don't turn off their music when it's on, for sure. And yeah, you sing along because you know it all. Would have been great live. Dave Grohl is, you know, great. Taylor Hawkins is great. So, yeah. Here I am.
Death Cab for Cutie, too.
Yeah,
you're not
fine.
A Death Cab fan.
I mean, I'm just not necessarily like my style. Like, I respect it. It's not like something I seek out necessarily. But, yeah, what a bummer, man. It looked great. It looked awesome. And for all the conversation we've had over the years about the importance of an arena for us as sports fans, as, you know, a community that gathers here to talk sports every day, we've always said in the background, it's like, gosh, Key Arena was such a dump to go to for a concert. It sounded awful. Half the bands would go to the Tacoma Dome, which sounded worse. And so, yeah, actually having a real venue for big-time shows, I think, is a pretty sweet part of this whole thing. So, instead, I stayed home. I watched a lot. I watched the Kraken, yikes, and then spent the rest of my night watching postseason baseball. There is nothing more unrecognizable as it makes its jump from the regular season to the postseason than baseball.
In several ways, but what is the one biggest that jumps out to you?
There's a bunch.
The intensity of it?
Obviously, the intensity is enormous. And, you know, the way everyone is living and dying with every pitch, from the players to the fans to the announcers, it feels so much bigger. Whereas regular season baseball is casual, postseason baseball is formal.
Oh, that's a really good way of putting it. It's just so loud, too.
It's you're invested in it. Baseball during the regular season in April and May, June, it's on, but you might take a nap. It's on, but you might be eating dinner.
Yeah, if you miss it, catch a highlight later.
Miss a pitch or two, and miss an inning while you're putting the kids to bed. Like, yeah, it's okay. Postseason baseball is an event. It's a formal. It's something that you gear up for and spend the day getting ready for and then watch it like it matters. And I love both of those things. I love regular season baseball for what it is. I love postseason baseball for what it is.
You break out your clean Carhartts for postseason.
Is that what you do?
Where I'm from, clean Carhartts mean you're going to a formal event.
Formal. Yes, I get that. Yeah, no, I understand that.
You get the hat without the oil all over the bill.
Right. In college, it meant you'd put on shoes. Like,
oh.
Going to school in Southern California, like after like five straight months of flip flops every day, you put on shoes. Somebody
be pants.
Like, you going on a date? Like, what do you mean? Like, well, you're wearing shoes. Like, oh, I don't know. It was just I thought we'd put on shoes today.
Yeah. Sleeveless tuxedo tee.
There you go.
Fancy.
The other thing, though, that now you're getting with baseball in the postseason is like the game is being played differently. Yeah, starting pitchers going like an inning and a half, you know, barely an inning and a third. Yep. See you later, Zach Greinke. Right. You might get a reliever who comes in for three, and then you might get a starter who comes in the seventh. I mean, just the way they throw and piece together their rotation and their arms throughout a game has zero resemblance to what you will see during the regular season, right? Because you the games all mean so much more. The rotations are shrunk. You're not playing every day. You get more off days. You need more out of people. You can use them for their bullpen day, like we saw from Tyler Anderson here in September. It's just great. So I was thinking, so where do the various sports teams rank, or various sports rank in terms of their difference? baseball clearly the best in terms of the biggest jump.
Oh, okay.
From playoffs to the regular season to playoffs. I would call the NBA number two, right? I think it has the second biggest jump because the players start taking it seriously. Instead of being like, oh, well, it's a second game of back-to-back, yeah, just sit them all out, right? Like, oh, we gotta watch his minutes. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't feel like when I watch the NBA, they take the games particularly seriously, 1 through 82.
Huh. I never really thought of it that way. I've never thought that players would. Is it just a posture and a demeanor thing?
I just don't think it matters that much. None of those games matter. Everybody's going to make the playoffs. So, like, whatever.
For the good teams, you know. Yeah.
For all the teams that matter, I mean, which is the only ones that are going to win the championship on any given year, I think they kind of mess around during the regular season, make sure that they're healthy by the time they get to the playoffs, and then they, you know, put their foot down and say, okay, let's go.
All right, yeah, I've watched about 15 minutes of basketball since the Sonics left, and it's only been the postseason, so I don't really actually know.
I don't really know either. I don't watch the NBA either. But my impression of it is sort of like that. The regular season seems to be about who can dunk on each other and make each other look bad and have storylines and soap operas like this Ben Simmons thing going on in Philly. And then the postseason's like, okay, let's go. Now we're actually going to play basketball, and it matters who wins and loses. Hockey is next. The game is very similar. It's just amped up a lot. It just gets, like, much more intense.
But they don't throw the rules out the window the way baseball does, right?
No, although I would say they drop the gloves a lot less. Like, there's much less fighting. And I would say they call fewer penalties has been my impression of it. I don't know if I have stats to back that up. But it does seem like they'll let them play a little bit more. They do change the rules in overtime, obviously, and so you get... You know, overtime that can go on forever and ever, which is great. That's an awesome part of playoff hockey. But for the most part, I feel like it's a similar game. And then football, amazingly, is almost identical. I mean, yeah, the games matter more, but don't you feel like the style of play is pretty similar in the playoffs as it is? I mean, I guess the one difference you'll get in football is weather. You might get those, like, snowy postseason games, and those are awesome. So there's a difference, but I don't know that it's nearly as significant. Baseball, by the way, when you're playing it like last night in Boston, the weather can completely change. You play baseball all year, all regular season in hot weather for the most part. And then you get to the playoffs and it's like 41 degrees. And you're like, the guys out there can't feel their hands.
Right, the bats are dead. The balls don't travel as far.
It's like a completely different game. I know you're jealous, though. You were telling me about it yesterday.
I've been to one playoff baseball game in my life, and I had to fly there just to see what it felt like.
Okay.
2017 Dodgers-Diamondbacks. Like, not even the biggest matchup there could have been, right? Just a West Coast playoff game. And I remember walking around, making eye contact with my Mariners hat of other fans, and just getting that look of like, oh, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, like, you don't know what this is about.
Hey, you should enjoy this while you're here. And it was, I don't want to say I was embarrassed. That's the wrong word.
Right.
But I felt pitied.
Well, yeah, I understand that. It is great, and eventually, and it does seem like it'll happen here in the very near future. I really feel like we'll get an opportunity to feel. And then you get the bad calls, and when they happen in the regular season, you're sort of mad for a day. When they happen in the playoffs, the postseason, you're mad forever, and you got it last night.
The breaking ball just missed. Tried the back door, the breaking ball. We talked about it earlier in the series. Nivaldi throws five pitches, at least 10% or more, and he throws all of them for strikes.
Funny, Buck and Smoltz didn't even really react to it as that bad a call, and it wasn't that bad. It was on the corner. It was a bad call. It should have been a strike. I'll be honest, watching it live, I didn't think it was. I thought he missed. Clearly, when you see the metrics afterwards, like, yeah, all right, I can see that it crossed the plate.
Maybe they didn't call it such a bad call because there were so many bad ones prior to it that it was just like, okay, we're numb now. These are awful.
Laz Diaz kind of all over the place, not the greatest umpire in the world. But you know what? You get that one bad call. Yes, they could have walked off the field in that moment. You'll see what happens in the bottom of the ninth. But instead, you gave up 7 runs.
That is a base hit into center. Correa coming to the plate. Astros take the lead here.
Maybe I wasn't mad because I'm rooting for the Astros, but I just like it just didn't bother me.
The Astros are my least favorite team in baseball, but really? I still like that one push on the bad call is like the last straw that, you know, tips over the cliff.
I know I'm supposed to hate the Astros and they're in the division and all that. I can't bring myself to do it. I just find so many of the guys on that team to be impressive. I really do. I just think they're such an impressive group of players. And I like them more when Springer was there because he's really the guy that I loved on that team. But I love watching Bregman. I can't help but like watching Altuve. And especially when they're not playing against my team, I just find them to be automatically the team I kind of gravitate towards watching. Maybe because I'm most familiar with them, too. I know everybody on the team. They're
that
really familiar to
like
me.
Them? That makes me hate them
I don't
more.
Know. Generally, that would. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I hate the Red Sox and Yankees more. So it's just much easier for me to kind of jump on the Astros thing for a little while. And I didn't want to root for the White Sox either because of Tony La Russa. So they've just kind of been the easiest team for me to jump on here. We weren't competing with them down the stretch either as Mariners fans. It was like, well, you're competing with the Red Sox and the Blue Jays
so
and
again,
the Yankees.
That should make you hate them more.
But we weren't
because they were so far ahead of
you. I know, but I didn't get into the rivalry with them in that moment. I don't know. Just they don't bother me. I'm sure they bother you. You can text it in 206-421-3776. Coming up next, the best news to come out of another bad loss will get you everything you need to know. Coming up, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, Salk, I think less of you. Says a texter, 206-421-3776.
Well, that was from weeks ago, so who knows?
I was going to say, maybe that's about being okay with the Astros, or maybe it's something else. I'm sorry, if I rooted for the Red Sox, would that be better? Then it would confirm everything you believe about me already. That'd be too easy. You know I'm not going to do that. It's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the epic road trip has finally come to an end, mercifully. The Kraken losing again last night. This time a more respectable 4-2 affair in New Jersey after digging yet another 3-0 hole. Sheesh, goals from Riley Sheahan and Jared McCann at least made it close, but Devils put in an empty netter, and that was that. Lots of action, though, before the game. The best news, Yanni Gourde made his Kraken debut a full month earlier than was originally expected. His recovery from off-season shoulder surgery went very well. He brought his energy to that first line last night. Very energetic player. Gourde won a couple of Stanley Cups, and Tampa was considered to be the best player that they selected in the expansion draft. Unfortunately, the news, less positive about goalie Chris Drieger. He was placed on injured reserve yesterday. Maybe that explains why he hadn't started any of the first four games. Joey Decord called up from the minors. He made the start in his place. Team collected just 3 points on the road trip. One win, one overtime loss. But the best news, it's over. They're coming home. Climate Pledge Arena will get opened up for hockey on Saturday night against Vancouver. Of course, the building got its first concert out of the way last night as the Foo Fighters christened it for the first time, which was great. Congratulations to them and everybody who was there. Not jealous at all, I promise.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, I know you think I'm obsessed with Cam Newton, but stay with me for just a moment. Here's the question. Why did Pete tell us about that? Why did he tell us about Cam? He didn't need to. The easy answer is, I guess, that he was asked a question and he just answered it, but coaches go beyond that, right? He's dodged questions like that in the past. He did with Richard Sherman not that long ago. Why was he willing to answer this one? Well, let me start by saying I love the honesty. I'm not complaining about it. I'm glad Pete answered it. And I'm 100% in favor of coaches answering questions that they're asked. But what? He didn't have to. He didn't have to answer this one. And especially if they're worried about players reacting negatively to the news. So why was he comfortable with that? Maybe he even wanted it. Who was he talking to? I always think that coaches are talking to people when they give an answer to a question like that. Could it be the fans? Maybe gearing people up for something? Could it be Russell? Letting him know that Pete's willing to do whatever is best for the team no matter what? Could he be talking to the rest of the roster, trying to let them know that he's overturning every stone to try to get them help? Is it Cam himself trying to get it into the news and maybe Cam will reconsider and have some like feeling that people want him? Maybe Geno Smith trying to remind him not to coast, that this isn't his job forever. I don't know. There's a lot of options, and it could all mean nothing.
Yeah, I think you're looking too far into it.
Or it could mean something. Big day of practice today. We'll get a sense for some of these injured Seahawks before a must-win Monday night game. Rashad Penny will be activated from IR. He may play a big role this week. We'll also see if Alex Collins can bounce back from the injuries that prevented him from finishing in Pittsburgh. Starting guard Damian Lewis, a concern as well, so a lot to watch for. Meanwhile, no chance of a quarterback change on Montlake as Jimmy Lake maintains they are, quote, not close to that. Dylan Morris has certainly struggled at times, though it's difficult to pin their season's issues on him alone. Still, star prospect Sam Heward is looming on the horizon. You would think at some point he would get some more reps in order to offer a springboard maybe into next season when he would presumably be the favorite to start.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, getting closer to a World Series matchup, Dodgers came storming back in the eighth inning yesterday to bring themselves back from the brink. Down 5-2, facing a 3-0 hole in the series, they got a three-run shot from Cody Bellinger, a big two-run double from Mookie Betts, and they took the lead for good. That series now 2-1 Atlanta with Game 4 tonight at 5 o'clock. We also have a series in the ALCS now for sure. Astros got a game-tying home run from Jose Altuve and then an untying single from Jason Castro in the ninth, part of a seven-run rally. That ties things up at two games apiece, as the series will have one more in Boston today and then swing back to Houston. Game 5 today, as I said, at 2 o'clock. Those are three things you need to know. We do that every hour, quarter past.
So are you a fan of the Major League Baseball replay rules at all? Any of the checking on run calls?
Yeah, I'm glad they do that. I think they needed to. There were too many gigantic calls that were incorrect and easily fixable.
Oh, okay.
And I think they needed to do that.
Maybe just like a strike call.
See,
a gigantic call in a gigantic game that easily swayed and pushed the
You're a Robo-ump guy. You want Robo-umps?
100% Robo-ump guy.
Why?
I don't want games to be decided by somebody behind the plate with maybe or maybe not a bias or an obvious stat that shows that they are bad. And when everyone else in the world has access to the information, whether that's a ball or a strike, except the one person who needs that information, I have a really hard time digesting that person should be back there.
I guess I don't know. I guess I think that the strike zone is just that. It's a zone. There is some give and take to it. And I don't know that it needs to be 100% black and white. It's in it or it's out of it. And I see the strike zone as being a little amorphous. It changes a little bit according to the batter. It changes a little bit according to the umpire. I don't mind that. I don't think umps are biased. I don't think that's a problem. I've never looked at an umpire and said, this one is biased against this team or that one. Are some better than others? Yeah, of course.
Swayed by moments.
I think the better plan, rather than going to robo-umps, which I think lead to other issues, would be to just get better umpires. That when there are guys that struggle, like Laz Diaz has all year long, like Angel Hernandez has for a decade plus, get rid of them.
Sure. And so there are policies in place that after the game, they're given a DVD of the whole game,
right,
that they're supposed to review to get better.
But they don't do a very good job.
They throw all
of
them in the garbage.
And I know people that have worked in the upper echelons of baseball umpire management, and they have no power whatsoever. The umps, for whatever reason, whether it's their union or what, these guys get these jobs for life. And that is a much bigger problem than whether or not Laz Diaz made one bad call or a bunch of bad calls last night. I think you got to get the home runs and the outs at first base and that stuff. You got to get that stuff accurate. But I don't know that I want the strike zone to be dictated by a robot. I am okay with the fact that there's some argument that if you ever follow the umpire, as a guy who does all these like umpire rankings on Twitter, it'll come out here in another hour or two. I'll tell you how it did for last night. But I like that there's not just a accuracy, but a consistency score.
Right.
I like that there are some umps who like to call a little more outside. Some who like it a little higher. Some who like it a little low strike. I think that's part of the game of baseball, of figuring out what exactly the strike zone is. And I think the consistency needs to be there much more so than the accuracy.
I agree with you. I know. I already convinced you. No.
That's all it took?
I'm saying there's a lot that goes into the old baseball style of a good pitcher finds the zone the first inning. And once you know where you're at, you can hit your spot. I like that too. But I hate games being decided in big moments by blown calls.
Was it decided, or did they then give up seven runs because they mentally turtled as soon as they got one bad call? I think there's a couple different ways to look at that.
Wheels came off.
All right, coming up next, we are going to buzz around the station. Mark Schlereth has had some perfect analysis, spot on, when it comes to the Seahawks. First, he said they needed war daddies on that defensive line. We're going to want to hear what he said next. We'll play that and a whole lot more. Coming up, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
206 arguing here. Salk is about the robo-umps. Do you like going to your favorite restaurant to order your favorite meal and have it made differently every time? No, bring out the robo-umps.
Thank you.
Well, you're actually getting the metaphor wrong, though. I like going to my favorite restaurant and having the same meal made the same way every time. Let's say it's chicken parm. I absolutely, if I go someplace for chicken parm, I want it made the same way every time I go in there. But I don't want chicken parm to be the same at every restaurant. I want it to be consistent. I don't necessarily need it to be the same and uniform wherever it goes. Chicken parm means a lot of different things in different places. It's not like Coca-Cola. When you open a Coke, it's got to taste like Coke. That'd be weird if it didn't.
All right, let's use the Coca-Cola reference.
Well, but no, you unfortunately chose to use the restaurant reference, and both you and the 206 here got all excited about your little restaurant reference.
All right,
but I would agree with you, yes, and you're making my point for me.
Okay, how about the 360? Couldn't the home plate ump be in charge of setting the strike zone in the Robo-Ump?
No,
yes.
I don't.
Could you take a billion pitches to get that zone?
You could. It's not as much fun, though. I think it's much more fun to have some stuff to argue about. We've taken so much of the argument out of sports. We do sports radio, for God's sakes. You got to have things to argue about. You got to have topics to come in and complain about. If you start fixing everything, there's nothing left to complain about, and then I'd be out of a job. So for the sake of my own employment, I would like for them to keep the strike zone exactly the way it is. All right, let's buzz around the station with some other radio hosts who are employed here as well. We'll start, who should we start with? Want to start with Jake and Stacy? They were talking some Daryl Taylor yesterday. Here's Jake and Stacy.
So that's the good news. The good news is that Daryl Taylor, first of all, that Daryl Taylor was okay. Nothing to do with the team. The good news is that Daryl Taylor is okay. The secondary good news is that he can return to play way sooner than anyone thought he would, even potentially this Monday night against the Saints. But it also reminded us, that good news, that the pass rush is in kind of bad shape. Not at all where we saw it being. Heading into this season, I know Curtis, I know Jake, and I know myself all talked about, look, this pass rush isn't going to have huge, big name talent outside of guys like Carlos Dunlap. Like, the most well-known names are going to be guys that like are a little bit older. Right? Like,
right.
Your guys that are young, that are like potentially going to be impact players, no one knows about. No one knows about Daryl Taylor, especially heading into this season. I mean, his name was showing up on that broadcast. Collinsworth was impressed with him. But obviously he was forced out of the game. And so, again, the good news is he's coming back. The bad news is Daryl Taylor's been the most impactful part of a pass rush that you had somewhat high expectations for. I mean, they had much of the same group without Jaron Reed, much of the same group heading into the year, and they finished last year 7th in sacks. So what's been the issue?
Well, the issue is that you're not getting production. You're not getting production from guys that you were anticipating would be the group that would help you generate those sacks. And so I look at Carlos Dunlap, I look at Kerry Hyder, I look at Jamal Adams, throw Benson Mayoa onto that list as well. But if you just talk with those three guys, Carlos Dunlap, Kerry Hyder, Jamal Adams, combined, they had 24 sacks in 2020. 24 sacks. This year, they have zero. Zero sacks. Last year, in terms of tackles for loss, 29. In 2020, they have 5 right now in 2021. So you just look at that group right there, in and of itself. That is a major cause for concern. And Benson Mayoa, you throw him onto the list. He has 1 sack this year, okay? And he's got 2 tackles for loss, whereas last year, Benson Mayoa had 7 sacks. And you saw a huge uptick in production from Benson Mayoa. So really, the group that you were banking on being the leaders of your pass rush haven't produced. And not only have they not produced, they've been non-factors. They have not been generating pressure. This isn't a Jadeveon Clowney situation where you're going, oh, they haven't got the sacks, but gosh, they've been disruptive. They're making plays. They're causing pressures. They're doing all these other things that make that player so dynamic and special. No, they're not even doing that.
I don't know why Jake and Stacy are so upset about this. Don't they know that you can't get pressure on Ben Roethlisberger?
Yeah,
he gets the ball out too fast.
Well, to be fair, I did see a stat that he was like the 3rd fastest release last week or something.
Sure it is, but come on. What are you talking about? You can't get pressure on, or it just can't be done. Nah, never happened. Nobody's ever sacked Ben. Can't be done. Can't do it. No way. No chance. Might as well give up. Just drop all 11 back into coverage because there's no way you're ever going to get any pressure.
He's not going to run. So
can't do it. Can't do it. Yeah, I don't understand that. Jake is 100% right. Stacy's right. Pass rush is a mess, man. We've been saying this from the beginning, too. I mean, when you look at the team, we never thought they were going to have a great pass rush. Right. But at least they cleaned it up in the second half of last year. And certainly when Carlos Dunlap showed up, has Dunlap played this year?
I have not heard his name called probably more than 2 times.
You know what that guy needs to do? put a real defensive end's number back on and start playing.
Try it again.
Number seven's not working for you, pal. Let's
unplug it and plug it back in.
Do a little refresh, a little power cycle.
You and the numbers. Well, this is where the question of scheme comes into play, though. We had Matt Hasselbeck tell us one week that he made a mistake and gave away a blitz mm-hmm. by standing up. I think the next week around the station, we heard Wyman say that he saw a mistake that he made.
Mm-hmm.
He's a veteran that we didn't seem to have issues with last year, so why is he making mistakes now?
Oh, because of the coaching. He's being coached to make mistakes now. It's a player thing, man. You signed a guy who's now making mistakes, I think. I mean, you think he's checked out? Maybe? Okay, if that's the case, I'll buy that.
I just think they seem confused out there sometimes about what they're supposed to be doing.
Maybe. I think that a veteran at his level should probably know what's going on. I don't know. Maybe it's that. Regardless, he's done nothing. Benson Mayo has done nothing, right? For the most part, anybody who you've had, Kerry Hyder has done next to nothing. It's really just been, essentially your rookie, Daryl Taylor. And when he got hurt, jeesh, Ben Roethlisberger ends that game with a perfectly clean jersey. He was touched one time. And by the way, I don't even really remember that time. They said that there was one QB hit. I don't even remember that.
Well, I think the only the sack the team got credit for was the last play of the game when he took.
Oh, that's not a sack.
Fall.
You don't get a sack.
You don't
get
a credit
no.
for that. It said one team sack. I don't remember that.
They did not have a team sack. It was a TFL. Like, I think you get a negative 1 yard rushing play.
I thought Curtis came in and told us he's like one team sack. I didn't see it.
I don't think they had one team. It was one team hit.
Oh, okay.
One hit.
I think on the stats it did say there was a sack, but yeah.
No way! They didn't sack him! I don't think they came close to him. I don't think they're lucky if they breathed on him. They're like, oh yeah, Ben, you don't need to wear a mask in this game. Normally we like you to wear a mask because of COVID. Nobody will breathe on you. The Seahawks aren't even going to rush the passer. They just kind of hang out. Well, because you can't, because you just get the ball out too.
What was Dunlap's number? 96 when he played for the Bengals?
I don't know what he wore when he played for the Bengals, but last year he had some sort of a real defensive end number. What did he wear, 95 or something? Look ridiculous out there, number seven. And that's why he doesn't have any sacks.
Number eight, Geno's number seven.
Same thing.
Same thing.
Number eight.
Ugly number.
Ugh. What are you doing? You're not a quarterback, man.
He was 96 with the Bengals and 43 with the Seahawks.
Those are real numbers.
That's it. Okay.
43 is okay. I don't love it. It's really a fullback's number, a linebacker number, but all right. Can allow it. I think those can look kind of cool for a defensive end. All right, here's a little bit more from around the station. Bob and Dave talking with Mark Schlereth, another problem with his defense.
What do you see when you watch him? Does he look like a guy who needs to stand in front of a jugs gun and just work on his hands? Is there something he could do to rectify that? Or do you look at it as, hey, that's not his strength. Let's emphasize his strengths and have him rush the passer.
Yeah, I see him as an in-the-box safety. When you get him in coverage, whether he's in zone as a deep safety or whether he's in man to man, I just don't think that's his strong suit. I don't think he's fluid in that part of the game. And I think, frankly, teams like to try to attack him if he's in coverage. That's where they want to throw it. Now, when he's down in the box, he's a problem. He's one of those dudes, you got to find that guy and you got to have a plan to contend with him. So, basically the way I see teams kind of operating is if he is back there, he's a guy that we'll go after. And from a coverage standpoint, because of the fact that he doesn't have great ball skills, but I don't think he has great coverage skills. I see guys running away from him on a consistent basis when he matches up to them. So I just don't think he's a great cover guy, but he is a real issue as an in-the-box player, when a blitz and run and all the things that he does from that position. So, the bottom line is you've got to put him in those positions to win as often as possible. And to do that, you've got to be great on the back end. And I think that's the biggest issue is they're not great on the back end. They haven't been great at the cornerback position. They haven't been, I think Diggs is a really good player, but I think the corners have been a question. So it's really hard to say, hey, we're just going to keep you in the box all the time if the rest of the guys can't hold up.
It's always Mark Schlereth, really, I think, has a clarity of analysis when he looks at the Seahawks, but it keeps going back to that question of talent versus scheme. So look at Jamal Adams, right? Hey, you want to use him as an in-the-box safety. You think Pete doesn't know that? You think Pete doesn't know that Jamal Adams is better at the line of scrimmage than as a free safety? Do you think Pete's stupid? I don't think Pete's stupid. I think he's a pretty smart guy. I criticize him sometimes. I think it's ridiculous that he said you can't possibly get pressure on Ben Roethlisberger. But I also kind of recognize Pete for what he is and some of his optimism and the way he spins things. That's fine. You think he's stupid?
I think there are a lot of people that think they're smarter than him.
I think that's true. I think that they should really be, you know.
Should be NFL coaches.
And I have no issues with criticizing coaches for decisions they make. That's part of the fun of being a fan. And the coaches know that's what they're signing up for when they become a coach. But I think what Pete would answer with truth serum is exactly what Mark Schlereth just said. You don't think I know that Jamal Adams is better as an in-the-box safety? Look at my corners. They need help. Look at my linebackers. They need help. They need help in coverage. Is that what he's best at? No. Do I want to use him that way? No. But I might not have a choice because the two guys I've had on the outside haven't been able to cover squat. And the linebackers in the middle haven't been able to drop deep enough and not get sucked up on play action fakes to be able to do their job in my scheme. So is it the fact that I can't coach, or do I not have the right players to put everyone in the right position to succeed? I know Jamal's better when he's at the line of scrimmage or in the box, but I don't have a choice right now. I need to play him back here. And yeah, maybe Ryan Neal is better at that, or maybe Marquise Blair is better than that, but what am I going to do, sit this guy? He's a weapon, so I'm trying to get him up to the line of scrimmage, but I can't.
So what happened from the time you decided it was important to go get him and now?
Your guys stopped. I mean, you lost Shaquille Griffin during that time. Your cornerbacks have played worse. Maybe your linebackers have gotten older faster than you expected them to, or your rookie linebacker, now second-year guy, hasn't developed as quickly as you might like. I don't know that you know, I don't know. I don't know. That's a great, great question. I don't know the answer to. But I think that you can kind of start to write a story where it's all about talent and not just scheme. You can also write the scheme, you know, where it's just about scheme and not just talent. But I you know, obviously there's a balance of both. I just think that it's Pete trying to make the best he can with some really big problems that he has defensively. And oh, by the way, in addition to what we just said at corner, you're not getting any pressure on the quarterback. Now, I know you can't because Ben just gets the ball out too quick, but you're not even getting any pressure on the quarterback. So we do have some breaking news. You want me to mention this here? I don't know how much I want to spend on it, but let's at least tell you guys. Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports, college sports expert there, has breaking news. I'll read the tweet. New, Nick Rolovich's lawyer releases a statement saying that he's taking legal action against Washington State and all parties responsible for his illegal termination. He accuses AD Pat Chun of discriminatory and vindictive behavior. Did anybody see this coming? Did anybody imagine that the lawsuit might come out of all this from Nick Rolovich after all of the silence leading up to it? It was almost like this is what he was planning for the last few months.
By being silent.
I can't imagine that any coach with the amount of trust put in him by all of the kids in his program would have been playing the long game for a legal battle. Really? Could you? Oh, wait. Yes, that makes perfect sense. Way to bathe yourself in glory today, Nick. Nice job. Way to stand up for what you think is right. No, you just decided to martyr yourself and then jump in front of the legal. This stuff drives me nuts. Whatever. Anyway, there's Nick Rolovich. That's what he's up to. I'm not going to give it too much more time in this moment because I'm probably going to end up saying something that I will regret later. But you don't say a word for the last however many months about this. And every time you get asked about it by the media, you're coy and you insult the media. Oh, because it's Chris Daniels' fault that he's asking you questions about this. Oh, I don't see any value in talking to you about it. That's what you say every time Chris Daniels asks you a question. A legitimate question, by the way, considering the position that you're in as the highest paid employee of the state. Nope. No, it's because I don't want to talk to the media. No, it isn't, you liar. You complete liar. It has nothing to do with whether or not you like his questions or not, or whether or not you think the media deserves an answer. It's because you don't want to say a word because you're preparing for your legal battle when it's all said and done. Oh, I just thought of this lawsuit yesterday. Boy, I guess I could sue. Of course that's what he was doing all along. Of course that was the plan. But in the meantime, you get to take your cheap shots at Chris Daniels because he's asking a couple of legitimate questions. Again, I didn't go after Nick Rolovich yesterday. I really didn't. And this isn't about vaxxing and not vaxxing, and it's not about political and not political. It's not. It really isn't. I know that I'm not even going to turn on the text toy because I know where it's going already. But you did have a responsibility in your job. You did have a responsibility as a leader of young men. You did have a responsibility as a teacher in theory, not just a football coach. And did you do any of that? Did you model any of that behavior? Did you lead by example? I thought Tom Tangney was brilliant talking about this with us yesterday in saying that he totally respects the idea of nonconforming, of standing up for what you believe. So do I. I have respect for Nick Rolovich standing up for his beliefs. Tom mentioned Martin Luther King and others who were willing to pay the price for their beliefs, for standing up for them. He mentioned the idea of Martin Luther King going to jail however many times, dozens if not hundreds of times, to stand up for what he thought was right. And Nick Rolovich was willing to pay the price. He was willing to lose his job. Oh, wait a minute. No, he's not. He's willing to settle for a lawsuit instead, and he's been setting this thing up for God knows how long. That's a totally different animal. That's a completely different animal. That's not standing up for your beliefs. That's not standing up for a cause. That's not leading people by showing them exactly how important those causes are to you. That's just looking to get paid in the back end. That's just making sure you CYA. You get a lawsuit that you're all set up for. And hey, remember, because you're going to sue, don't say anything to the media about this. It'll only get used against you later. So don't actually try to teach anybody about what you believe. No, wait for the lawsuit and then just try to make sure you snake some money off the state at the end. Yeah, that's a way to do it. Nice job, Nick. You're real impressive. You're a real impressive dude. Good job, dude. Nice.
It's like, I don't have enough popcorn for what just happened. I was waiting on. I was like, you started with, I'm not going to get into it. We got into
that's
it.
That's such garbage, man. The whole litigious society thing drives me crazy in general. It really does. And I say that as somebody who's been involved with a pretty significant lawsuit for negligence. I feel incredibly was warranted and all of that. I feel like it just cheapens it when everything becomes litigious. You're suing over this? Of course you are. All right, fine. That's the world we live in today. Fine. But don't expect me to look at you as a leader. Don't expect me to look at you as some sort of a coaching leader of men. Gosh, if I was an AD or somebody in power, a regent or a booster at another school, you want to bring this guy in now? Remember, it's not just the whole, he got fired for this, but this isn't the only black mark on Nick Rolovich's illustrious career here in Washington State. Let's not forget the fact that he's being sued by a player for racial bias. Oh, and by the way, he's also been accused of, and I believe it's in that lawsuit, of hiding COVID numbers. I don't know exactly what's come out of all that. I wonder if some of it might come up in the lawsuit. I guess we'll find out. Pat Shunn is being discriminatory and vindictive. Really? Pat Shunn's being discriminatory and vindictive. That's the accusation. Look, I haven't read all of it yet. I haven't read the whole lawsuit. Maybe I'll read it and I'll take every word I just said back. Maybe I'll read the lawsuit and come back and just say, you know what? I'm sorry. I was wrong. He's got a great point. He was absolutely discriminated against. And if it is, I'll stand up to you and say, all right, I jumped the gun. Sorry about that. But what it sure looks like today is that he's been setting this thing up for God knows how long.
And Pat Shunn had to know it was coming too, right?
I assume so. Who didn't? Who didn't know this was coming? Pat Shunn, everybody involved. Everybody at Washington State. God, if I was a Wazoo alum today or if I was a booster, I'd just be so furious. Now this thing is going to go on and you're going to get dragged through and Pat Shunn's going to have to get dragged through this. Now, look, maybe I'll find out that Pat Shunn has been behind the scenes saying discriminatory things nonstop. Maybe he hates Nick Rolovich for some group that he's a part of that I don't understand. I don't know what that would be. His religious beliefs. Maybe Pat Shunn is anti-religious, whatever religion Nick Rolovich is. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't seen any real like evidence yet. Maybe that's the case.
The whole thing
discriminatory and vindictive.
Regardless of what side you're on, I just feel awful for the players that are trying now to play through this for the rest of especially the seniors, right? This should be an exciting celebration, glorious time for them to end their careers at the University of Washington, Washington State.
Yeah.
And it's going to turn into now, oh, yeah, I remember this being clouded over by this awful experience.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Appreciate that. But at least you got your shots in at Chris Daniels and the media because it was their fault that they were asking you questions about all this. Jeez. All right. I know I'd see the texts. Don't go political on this. It's not political, man. It's not. It's about leadership. It's about sports. It's about Nick Rolovich, the coach at Washington State University. I don't care about the bus driver's suit. We're not going to sit here and talk about who's suing Jay Inslee for what. I don't care. That's not a big story here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Go tune into Dave Ross. He'll tell you about it all morning. I don't care about that. Nick Rolovich was the head football coach at Washington State, and he's now going to sue Washington State University. I assume, by the way, that the tweet means the university and not Washington State. Which do you think it means? The tweet from Pete Thamel says, Nick Rolovich's lawyer releases a statement saying that he's taking legal action against Washington State and all parties responsible for his illegal termination. He accuses AD Pat Chun of discriminatory and vindictive behavior. Because of the Pat Chun part, I assume it means Washington State University.
Yeah.
But given that everyone outside of the Northwest, and Pete Thamel lives in Massachusetts, refers to Washington, the state, as Washington State, because generally they're talking about D.C., and this is like a complete afterthought to anybody who lives in the Northeast. I wonder what
Adam
means.
Rittenberg says Rolovich will be taking legal action against Washington State University.
Okay, there you go.
And all parties responsible for his illegal termination.
Right, that's what I assume. All right, so he's going after the university, which again seems kind of odd, doesn't it? The university's following a state mandate. We'll see where all this goes. That's my feelings. I'm sorry. I said I wasn't going to talk about it, but I did. So, you know what? Sue me, just like I'm Washington State University. Coming up next, if you think that was bad, just wait till you hear what I'm going to talk about next. You're going to love it.
Sweet tease.
I promise. Oh, can we play that Rappaport sound too? Can I play something funny for a few minutes instead?
Yeah, let's have some fun.
All right, I will play something that at least I find funny next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.